0023. The Director. You returned to what you knew or thought you knew. The Lighthouse and the Seance and Science Brigade, reinvigorated due to the line item linking the SNSB and Jack Severance. You comb through every file 3 or 4 times, force yourself to once again review the history of the Lighthouse and its ruined sister on the island. At odd moments, you see Henry's face, a pale circle from a great distance, moving closer and closer until you can catalog every unsavory detail. You don't know what he means, know only that Henry is not someone to be cast aside too quickly. He nags at you like an unopened letter that everyone has with overconfidence, predicted will contain something banal. Your antipathy toward them made you dismissive as a child. You hadn't been looking for ways to emblazon them in your memory, to capture details, but instead to banish them, edit them out, make them go away. This annoyance, this presence that you could tell made Saul uncomfortable, even uneasy. But what about them had made Saul feel that way? No Henry, no Suzanne that looked like them appeared on the lists of the SNSB members. No stray photos with members unidentified leaped out to reveal either of them. Prior investigations had tracked down the names and addresses of any member assigned to the Forgotten Coast, and exhaustive interviews had been conducted. The answers were the same. SNSB had been conducting standard research, the usual mix of the scientific and the preternatural. Anyone who knew anything else had been trapped inside and disappeared long before the first expedition stumbled through the corridor into Area X. Worse, no further hint of Severance, Jack or Jackie, the latter also making herself scarce in the flesh, as if something new had caught her attention, or she knows you want to question her, with each phone call fading into the backdrop, further subsumed by Central, so that you redouble your efforts to find her influence in the files. But if Lowry haunts you, Severance is the kind of ghost that's too smart to materialize. Once again, you watch the video from the first expedition, again study the background, the things out of focus at the lighthouse. Through a flickering time-lapse and sequencing, you review a kind of evolution and devolution of the lighthouse from inception through the last photograph taken by an expedition. To the point that Grace takes you aside one day and says, "This is enough. You need to run this agency. Other people can review these files." "What other people? What other people are you talking about?" you snap at her and then instantly regret it. But there are no other people, and time is running out. You have to remember that, on some level, the entire Southern Reach has become a long con. And if you forget that, you're not part of the solution. You're part of the problem. "Maybe you need time off, some rest," Grace tells you. "Maybe you need to get some perspective. You can't have my job. I do not want your fucking job." She's simmering. She's about to boil over. And some part of you wants to see that, wants to know what Grace is like when she's totally lost it. But if you push her to that, she'll have lost you, too. Later, you go up to the rooftop with a bottle of bourbon, and Grace is already there in one of the deck chairs. The Southern Reach building is nothing but a big, ponderous ship, and you don't know where the helm has gotten to. Can't even lash yourself to the wheel. "I don't mean anything I'm saying most of the time," you tell her. "Just remember, I don't mean anything I say." A dismissive sound, but also arms unfolding, grim frown loosening up. "This place is a fucking nut house." Grace rarely swears anywhere but on the roof. "A nut job." Paraphrasing Cheney's latest puzzled, hurt soliloquy about lack of good data. "Even a falling acorn tells us something about where it fell from, Newton would tell us, wouldn't you say? That'd be a trajectory, for heck's sake. And then you'd backtrack, even if theoretical, find some point on the tree that acorn came from, or near enough." You can't say you've ever understood more than a third of his ellipticals. "A Wyatt Tits nut job," Grace says, referring to the frozen white tents of the Southern Reach Border Command and Control. "Our white tits nut job," you say sternly, wagging a finger. "But at least not nut jobs like the water feature crew." After Cheney's outburst, you went over yet another pointless, non-productive report from the water feature crew, the agency studying radio waves for signals from extraterrestrial life. Central has suggested more than once that you team up with them. They listen for messages from the stars across a sliver of two microwave regions unencumbered by radio waves from natural sources. These frequencies they call the waterhole because they correspond to hydrogen and hydroxyl wavelengths. A fool's chance to assume that other intelligent species would automatically gravitate to the watering hole, as they call it.
While what they were looking for snuck in the back door.
Set up the back door and walk through it.
You're looking up, and meanwhile something walks by and steals your wallet, Grace says, cackling.
Water feature built for nothing. They prefer the servant's entrance, thank you very much, you say grandly, passing the bourbon. You don't just turn on the sprinklers and pump up the slip and slide. You truly don't know what you're saying anymore, but Grace bursts into laughter, and then things are all right again with Grace for a while. And you can go back to Henry and Suzanne, the talking mannequins, the deathly dull, or just deathly twins. But at some point that same week, Grace finds you throwing file folders against the far wall, and you've no excuse for it except a shrug. Bad day at the doctor's. Bad day prepping for the expedition. Bad day doing research. Just a bad day in a succession of bad days. So you do something about it. You fly out to Lowry's headquarters about 1 month before the 12th expedition. Even though it's your idea, you're unhappy you have to travel. Had hoped to lure Lowry to the Southern Reach one last time. Everything around you, your office, the conversation in the corridors, the view from beyond reach, has acquired a kind of compelling sheen to it. A clarity that comes from knowing you will soon be gone. Lowry's in the final stages of his pre-expedition performance, has been exporting the less invasive of his techniques to Central. He enjoys impersonating an instructor for the benefit of expedition members, according to Severance. The biologist, she reassures you, has suffered minimal meddling. The only thing you want ratcheted up in the biologist is her sense of alienation from other people. All you want is that she become as attuned inward to Area X as possible. You're not even sure she really needs your push in that regard, from all reports. No one in the history of the program has so willingly given out the use of her name. Light hypnotic suggestion, conditioning that's more about Area X survival than any of Lowry's dubious value adds, his claims to have found a way around the need, on some level, for the subject to want to perform the suggested action, a kind of trickery and substitution. The stages you've seen described are identification, indoctrination, reinforcement, and deployment. But Grace has seen other documents that borrow the semiotics of the supernatural. Manifestation, infestation, oppression, and possession. Most of Lowry's attention has accreted around the linguist, a volunteer with radicalized ideas about the value of free will. You wonder if Lowry prefers it when there's more or less resistance. So you absorb the brunt of his briefing. His report on progress, his teasing taunt about whether you've reconsidered his offer of hypnosis, of conditioning, with the hint behind it that you couldn't stop him if you tried. Honestly, you don't give a shit about his briefing. At some point, you steer Lowry toward the idea of a walk, down by the fake lighthouse. It's early summer, the weather's still balmy, and there's no reason to sit there in Lowry's command and control lounge. You cajole him into it by appealing to his pride. Asking for the full tour, taking just one thin file folder you've brought with you. So he gives you the not-so-grand tour through this miniaturized world of ever-decreasing wonder. There's the strange, kitschy quality of piped-in music through speakers hidden around the grounds. A distant but cheery tune. Not pop, not jazz, not classical, but something all the more menacing for being jaunty. At the top of the quaint little lighthouse, what would Saul think of it? He points out that the day mark is accurate, as well as the fucking glass shard somebody added later. When he pulls the trapdoor open at the top, what's revealed in the room below are piles and piles of empty journals and loose blank pages, as if he's bought a stationery store as a side business. The lens isn't functional either, but as if by way of apology, you get a history lesson.
Back in the day, way back in the day,
They used to just shove a big fucking fatty bird onto a stake and light it on fire for a beacon.
That goddamn hole in the ground, as Lowry puts it, is the least accurate part. An old gunnery position with the gun unit ripped out, leaving the granite-lined dark circle that leads down a ladder to a tunnel and then doubles back to the hill behind you that houses most of Lowry's installations. You climb down only a little ways, enough to see, framed on the dank walls, Lowry's art gallery, the blurry out-of-focus photographs blown up, brought back by various expeditions. A kind of meta version of the tunnel brought to the faux tunnel, displaying with confidence something unknowable. Thinking of Saul on the steps of the real tunnel, turning toward you, and feeling such an acute contempt for Lowry that you have to remain there, looking down for long moments, afraid it will show on your face. After you've made the right noises about how impressive it all is, you suggest continuing along the shore, fresh air and nature. And Lowry acquiesces, defeated by your tactic of asking a question about each new thing ahead because he just cannot shut up about his own cleverness. You take a side path that leads north along the water. There are geese nesting on a nearby rocky point that give you both the stink eye. An otter in the sea in the middle distance, shadowing you. Eventually, you turn the conversation to the S&SB. You pull out a piece of paper, the line item linked to Jack Severance. You point it out to him, even though it's highlighted in hot pink. You present it as a funny thing, this thing Lowry must have known about too, given his secret debriefing of your childhood experiences when you first joined the Southern Reach. Is that the reason you and Jackie are working together? You ask. That the S&SB had a link to Central through Jack? Lowry considers that question, a kind of smirk on his craggy face. A smirk, and a look down at the ground and back up at you.
Is that all we're out here for? For that? Jesus, I might have given you that in a fucking phone call.
Not much, I guess, you say. Sheepish smile offered up to a raging wolf of a narcissist. But I'd like to know, before you cross the border. A hesitation, a sideways glance that's appraising you hard for some hidden motivation, or some next move that maybe he can't see. Prodding? A side project? The S&SB a side project to Central, or...
Sure, why not?
Lowry says, relaxing.
The usual kind of dependent clause that could be excised at any time, no harm done.
Sometimes the ancillary infected the primary. Sometimes the host and the parasite got confused about their roles, as the biologist might have put it. That's how you got the photograph of me at the lighthouse. Not a question.
Very good, he says, genuinely delighted. Too fucking true. I was on a mission to find evidence to make sure you stayed true. And then I wondered, how come that was in Central's files in the first place? And not over at the Southern Reach. Wondered where it originated. And then I found that very same line item.
Except Lowry had a higher security clearance, could access information you and Grace couldn't get your hands on. That was smart of you. Really smart. Lowry puffs up, chest sticking out, aware he's being flattered, but can't help the self-parody. That's not really parody at all. Because where's the harm? You're on the way out. He's probably already thinking about replacements. You haven't bothered putting Grace's name forward. I've been working on Jackie Severance in that regard instead.
The idea was straightforward, the way Jack told it. The S&SB was kind of batshit crazy, low probability. But if there actually was anything uncanny or alien in the world, we should monitor it, should be aware of it. Maybe influence or nudge it a bit, provide the right materials and guidance. And if troublemakers or undesirables join the group, that's a good way to monitor potential subversives, too. And also a good cover for getting into places hidden in plain sight for surveillance, a methodology Central was keen on back then. A lot of anti-government types along the Forgotten Coast.
Did we recruit, or?
Some operatives embedded, and some folks we persuaded to work for us because they liked the idea of playing spy. Some folks who got a thrill out of it, didn't need a deeper reason like God and country. Probably just as well.
Was Jackie involved too?
Jack wasn't just protecting himself, Lowry says. When Jackie was starting out, she helped him a bit. And then she came to the Southern Reach later and helped Jack again, to make sure none of this came out. Except I found out. As I do sometimes. As you know. Ever come across a Henry or Suzanne in the files? Never any names used in what I saw. Just code names like, I don't know, Big Hauler and Spooky Action and Damned Pork Chop, that kind of crap.
But none of this is the real question, the first of the real questions. To the SNSB facilitate, knowingly or unknowingly, the creation of Area X? Lowry looks both stunned and amused beyond reason or good sense.
No, of course not. No, no, no. That's why Jack could keep his secret, snuff it out. Strictly in the wrong place at the wrong time. Because otherwise I would have taken measures.
But you think he meant to say would have killed them all?
And it turns out Jack was running it mostly on his own initiative, which is something I think we can both appreciate, right?
Above you loomed the old barracks, the Warrens, gun slits from concrete bunkers. Do you believe Lowry? No, you don't. The little gravel beach where you both stand is some distance from the fake lighthouse. It has a fringe of anemic grass, and right before the water, a line of rocks covered in white lichen. The brilliant sun, for a moment, becomes lost in a depression of clouds and shadow, the pale blue surface of the sea a sudden gray. The otter that has been trailing you has come closer. Its constant chattering monologue of clicks and whistles, Lowry finds somehow disrespectful, perhaps because of prior encounters. He starts yelling at the otter, and the otter keeps talking and popping up somewhere unexpected, so Lowry can never adjust to throw the pebble he plans on caroming off the otter's head. You sit down on the rocks, watch the show.
Goddamn fucking creature. Goddamn stupid fucking animal.
The otter shows off a fish it's caught, swimming on its back, eyes full of a kind of laughter, if that's possible. The otter skims and zags and disappears and comes back up. Lowry's pebbles skip and plop without effect, the otter apparently thinking it's a game. But it's a game that bores the otter after a while, and it submerges for a long time. Lowry standing there, with one hand on his hip, the other a fist around a rock, searching for a new ripple in the water, seeming to want to guess how long the otter can hold its breath, what range of options the animal has for where it can come up for air. Except it never reappears, and Lowry's left standing there, holding a rock. Is Lowry a monster? He is monstrous in your eyes, because you know that by the time his hold on Central, the parts of Central he wants to make laugh and dance the way he wants them to laugh and dance, by the time this hold, the doubling and mirroring, has waned, as most reigns of terror do, the signs of his hand, his will have irrevocably fallen across so many places. His ghost will haunt so much for so many years to come, imprint upon so many minds, that if the details about the man known as Lowry are suddenly purged from all the systems, those systems will still reconstruct his image from the very force and power of his impact. You take out a photo of the cell phone, nudge his arm with it, make him take it. Lowry blanches, tries to hand back the photograph, but you're going to make him keep it. He's stuck holding it and the rock meant for the otter. He drops the rock, but won't look at the photograph again. Lowry, I think you lied about this phone. I think this is your phone from the first expedition. You've a sense, as you say the words, that you're going too far, but you'll be going even farther soon.
You don't know that's my phone.
It's got a long history now. Lowry.
No.
Stark. Final. Letting in no light. A kind of self-damnation. No protest. No outrage. None of the usual Lowry drama. No. Without any way to pry loose some light between the letters of that word, so you'll have to try yourself across the border. Are you working for them? Is that the problem? You leave the them vague on purpose.
For them?
A laugh that burned.
Why? Is there a problem with the phone?
Still not an admission. Does Area X have unfinished business with you?
Is there something you haven't told us about the first expedition?
Nothing that would help you.
Bitter now. Directed at you for ambushing him, or at someone else?
Lowry, if you don't tell me whether or not this is your cell phone, I'm going to go to Central and tell them all about the SNSB. All about where I came from, how you covered it up. I'm going to scuttle you for good.
You'll be done for yourself, then.
I'm done for anyway. You know that.
Lowry gives you a look that's equal parts aggression and some secret hurt coming to the surface.
I get it now, Gloria,
he says.
You're going on a suicide mission and you just want everything out in the open, even if it's unimportant. Well, you should know that if you share with anyone, huh?
You're corrupted data, you tell him. If we use your own techniques on you, Lowry, what would we find in your brain coiled up in there?
How the fuck dare you?
He's trembling with anger, but he's not moving. He's not retreating one inch. It's not a denial, although it probably should be. Guilt? Does Lowry believe in guilt? Pushing now, probing now, not certain if what you're saying is true.
While on the first expedition, did you communicate with them? With Area X?
I wouldn't call it communication. It's all in the files you've already seen.
What did you see? How did you see it?
Were we doomed when you came back or before?
There will never be a grand unified theory, Gloria. We will never find it. Not in our lifetime. And it'll be too late.
Lowry, trying to confuse things, escaped the spotlight.
You know, they're looking at water on the moons of Jupiter right now, out there. Our not-so-secret sister organizations. There might be a secret sea out there. There might be life right under our noses. But there's always been life right under our noses. We're just too blind to see it. These fucking questions, they don't matter.
Jim, this is evidence of contact. Finding this particular cell phone in Area X. That it indicates recognition and understanding of some kind.
No, random. Random, random.
It wants to talk to you, Jim. Area X wants to talk to you. It wants to ask you a question, doesn't it?
You don't know if this is true, but you're sure it'll scare the shit out of Lowry. You have the sense of a time delay in Lowry, a gap or distance between the two of you that is very, very wide. Something ancient shines out of his eyes, peers out at you.
I won't go back, he says.
That's not an answer.
Yes, it's my phone. It's my fucking phone.
Are you seeing Lowry as he was right after coming back from the first expedition? How long could a person hold to a pattern, a process, despite being fundamentally damaged? Whitby telling you, I think this is an asylum, but so is the rest of the world. Don't you get tired after a while? You ask him, of always moving forward but never reaching the end. Of never being able to tell the truth to anyone?
You know, Gloria, he says, you'll never really understand what it was like that first time, going out through that door in the border, coming back. Not if you cross the border 1,000 times. We were offered up and we were lost. We were passing through a door of ghosts into a place of spirits. And I asked to deal with that for the rest of our lives.
And what if Area X comes looking for you?
There's still that remoteness to Lowry's gaze, as if he's not really there, standing in front of you. But he's done, pushed to his limit, stalks off without even a glance back.
You will never see him again, ever. And that temporary relief puts juice in your step as the sun returns, as the otter returns. And you sit by the shore and watch the animal cavort and frolic for a few minutes that you hope will never end.